we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
I'm not gonna spend my life being a color.
Do you agree with me when I saw you kicking dirt in my eye?
It's Race Across America, 99.1 FM Talk, KKFT.
And good afternoon. I'm Paul White. Welcome to Race Across America. If you're concerned about America's race situation, this is your show. Honest discussion, everyone's held accountable, nobody gets a free pass, just full factual reporting on what's going on in race issues in this nation. We welcome call-ins, 775-884-9910, 775-884-9910. You can email questions at raceacrossamerica20@gmail.com. Also, second half of today's show, we've got a great interview with Thomas Abbott, a triracial young man who directs a national marketing advertising firm. It's close to midnight, and something evil's lurking in the dark. That's how the classic song Thriller by Michael Jackson starts. And it begs the question, what does Black Lives Matter organization have in common with the old Michael Jackson Thriller jacket from the 80s? You've seen them. They were bright red leather, had big zippers everywhere. Well, the answer is, the Thriller jacket and Black Lives Matter both became hugely popular almost overnight. With the Thriller jacket, people just wore them for a short while and decided it was a ridiculous fashion statement and got rid of them. With Black Lives Matter, people have been supporting them for a while. But good news is the supporters are starting to realize that BLM's values and mission are not just racist and ineffective, but they're dangerous. And Black Lives Matter is starting to lose supporters. Just this week, Wisconsin supporters of Black Lives Matter dropped 25% in the wake of all the unnecessary rioting and looting and burning that went on there. As America, thinking Americans realize, trading white supremacy of the pre-civil rights era for BLM's current promotion of black supremacy, it doesn't improve anything. Racism's racism, and it doesn't work. As Americans have seen the violence and destruction of unchallenged criminal behavior for the past several months, we're realizing BLM's demonizing of the police, it's not true, and it doesn't work. Getting rid of the cops would just make dangerous chaos in our country. BLM supporters are leaving them because black lives do not really matter to BLM. If it did, why wouldn't they mention an abortion rate among blacks that's three times that of whites? Thousands more black babies are aborted each year in New York City than are born there. 20 million black babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade in 73. Black Lives Matter is silent about that. Black lives also don't matter to them in terms of murders. Why else would BLM have zero mention that blacks murder as many other blacks every 6 months in America than the Ku Klux Klan killed in 86 years? That's a rock-solid fact. The murder rate is 10 times that of whites and Latinos, the black-on-black murder rate. Supporters are abandoning BLM's desire to exclude black men from raising their own children. They don't want the black fathers in the home. Go on their website and look. We see daily media stories of what happens when young males of any color don't have a strong father figure in their lives. BLM wants to get rid of that. Michael Jackson's Thriller jacket, it had its fashion moment. Then it went away. BLM has had a much longer political moment than it should have had, and people of all colors are realizing it's time for Black Lives Matter to get kicked off the public stage. Time to reject their attempts to lead America down a path of divisiveness and hate that isn't improving the lives of anyone. What do you think? Call in 775-884-9910. We want to hear your opinion. Winner of this week's Whiniest Racist Award is an op-ed column by the Black LA Times reporter Erin Logan. Miss Logan's essay complains that Black Lives Matter is being ruined by too much white support, that they're struggling to maintain their radical tough guy image, BLM, in fighting against the systemic racism and police brutality, which, by the way, no one in America can prove exists today. Miss Logan's essay states that whites just don't know how to be tough protesters, because only black people, this is her words, only black people know what it's like to fight for important humanitarian causes, while whites just presumably concern themselves with less urgent issues like melting glaciers. Miss Logan, you're a textbook case of reverse racism. If you're just 25 years old, as you claim, you haven't lived through anything racially in America that would qualify you and your judgmental racist whining to be taken seriously by anyone. Prominent names in the news this week. Breonna Taylor and Jacob Blake remain. What's new with Breonna Taylor? You recall it was not an accidental break-in by the police. They absolutely had her address, social security number, name. They were targeting her to get more evidence on the drug dealer that they knew was in custody. Well, but what we didn't find that came out this week is that Miss Taylor had literally years of involvement with the man the police were looking for and other felony drug dealers. There's photos, there's recorded phone conversations, and they're all available in a 39-page police investigation report that's available online. Jacob Blake, still in the news. Remember, outstanding felony warrant for 3 counts of third-degree sexual assault and domestic abuse. He was armed with a knife. He was resisting a lawful arrest, headlocked a cop and punched him in the face. He was tased twice, ran off to reach inside his car for probably not a sandwich. And yes, he was shot by the police, just as the law provides and just as it needs to provide. For Taylor, Blake, or multiple felon George Floyd to be personally mourned by their family and friends is normal human behavior, and it's sad anytime anyone's life is lost. But to treat any of those 3 individuals like they were civil rights heroes or victims of police brutality is ludicrous and totally at odds with the unarguable facts of all their cases. The question is, when are we going to find even one of these alleged black victims of police brutality who did not bring it on themselves with felony criminal behavior? How about just one? It wasn't Trayvon Martin or Michael Brown or Tamir Rice or Eric Gardner or Freddie Gray or Philando Castile or the 3 I just mentioned? What's going on this week in Race Across America? Well, in California, Contra Costa County, the district attorney, black woman named Diana Becton. She's issued the police departments in her county a notice that before they go arresting looters, they want to find out if it was recreational looting or did the family need it. In other words, that silk blouse or Gucci purse, was that essential to their family or no? How much was the looting material they took worth? And how did they enter the store? If you weren't reading this stuff out of the media, you'd think someone was making it up. In San Francisco, at 49ers Stadium, right up there next to the American flag, proudly flies the BLM flag, the founders of whom are proud Marxists and hate democracy. How's that sit, I wonder, with the families of the 1 million-plus men and women of all colors who died protecting American freedom, including the 360,000 Union soldiers, 40,000 of whom were black, all of whom died to get rid of slavery and improve the plight of black Americans in the U.S.? What can you do about this? I don't know. I would think not watching the games and canceling your season tickets would be a good start. In L.A., A black man this week named Dijon Kesey, shot by L.A. deputies. Why would they do that? Well, maybe he was riding his bike illegally in the street, then refused to stop, then ran away. Deputies caught up with him. He punched one in the face. While doing so, he dropped a bundle of clothing that had a handgun in it. Registered, I'm sure, right? Reached for the gun. Got shot and died. Sad, yes. Expected? What else? Sacramento. Legislature's ready to approve a bill. It's going to require public school students in California to take a full semester of indoctrination of BLM materials, learning how to engage in community action resistance, and how to totally disrupt the current system. They didn't say what the title would be. I would suggest Destroying America 101. And 80% of public school teachers say they support BLM. Parents, grandparents, how many more reasons do you need to pull your child out of our public schools? In Oakland this week, it just seemed like you were in Iran. A 700-person BLM march. What was the chant? Death to America. In New York City. You can't even escape this in church. At the Francis Xavier Catholic Church in New York City, priests were asking the whole congregation to stand and recite a pledge for ending white privilege. Kind of went like this. This is a quote. Do you affirm that white privilege and the culture of white supremacy must be dismantled? Yes or no? Do you affirm that white privilege is unfair and harmful to those who have it and those who don't? Well, and to encourage the parishioners, there on the altar were three big pictures they were looking at. Now, they weren't of Jesus. They were of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. What's next? Sainthood? Just last night, you probably saw in the paper today, there was rioting in Rochester, New York, climbing up on people's houses, like climbing up on where you have like a dormer on a second floor, banging on the window in your home, saying, come out, get out of that house, get out of there. Now, what was this about? Well, several months ago in March, a middle-aged man named Daniel Prude, high out of his mind on PCP, police were called and found him on a street on about a 30-degree evening, completely naked, rolling around in the street, screaming and yelling. Police came up, and of course, PCP is what you take if you want your heart to stop, if you want your blood pressure to explode, etc. Well, he took it. He was totally out of his mind. He was screaming for the cops to give him their gun. Police cuffed him and left him there in the street, circled around him so he wouldn't hurt himself to calm down. Well, he didn't calm down. Tried to get away, again was screaming. Then he started spitting, trying to spit on the police. He's screaming, I've got COVID-19. And this was back when people were very afraid, more afraid of it than what might happen. So the police put on what's called a spit hood. And it's just, I've seen them do it. I've seen them do it here in our city of Reno with homeless people when they went off on drugs. It just keeps the cop from being absolutely vilely abused by people with bodily fluids. Well, coroner's report said Daniel Prude was asphyxiated by it. Well, of course, it's like if you've got your heart rate and your breathing rate and everything so crazy from these drugs, and you're out of control and you're breaking the law, and you're trying to assault an officer with what could be deadly to them, spit. A lot of cops have died from COVID-19. Then they put that on him. Hood didn't kill him. The cops didn't kill him. What it did lead to is this huge riot in Rochester screaming about stop white supremacy. You know, you got to be careful who you pick for your heroes, right? Or your icons. You pick a guy, who cares what color Daniel Prude was? He didn't have enough going to avoid a drug that kills you. The police handled him. There's video, careful video of the whole thing, and there's not anything resembling abusiveness in it. Nobody talking about, yeah, tragedy, but what else do you expect when you take a deadly drug? Oh, let's see, in Portland, BLM and Antifa have moved on. Now they don't just burn buildings. This week they set fire to an occupied apartment. If things had gone the wrong way, you could have had dozens, if not hundreds, of people killed in that. Meanwhile, the police were told just to stay away and let them do it, and the police did. If there's anybody in Portland not doing everything they can to get rid of their city council and mayor, I don't understand it. Meanwhile, Aaron Danielson, the white conservative who was shot and killed by a BLM Antifa suspect, who then later was taken into, tried to be arrested the following day by the police, and he jumped out, pulled a gun on the police, and they shot and killed him. It was said at first on the media that Danielson's group, called Patriot Prayer, is just another white supremacist group. Well, no. A little later, the left-wing media outlet Slate admitted that the group's founder, Patriot Prayer's founder, has repeatedly denounced racism and white supremacy for years. I kind of doubt if you saw that, though, when you looked at the story. Meanwhile, at the Capitol, Salem, Oregon, their legislature approved a blacks-only relief fund of $62 million. Now, they're not saying what it is. What is it? About one out of the average Latino is about 8% black. You've got biracial questions. Who qualifies for this would be a little tricky. It's going to be about $500 a piece for individuals and businesses. But if I'm a Latino, white, or Asian business owner, and during the past four Trump years, he's given the largest number of business loans to black businesses they've ever had, and black employment is at an all-time high, I'm not sure I understand why this is just targeted for blacks. If no one's talking about reverse racism, they should. In Washington, D.C., the mayor and her advisory group are considering just trying to get rid of every trace that Thomas Jefferson ever existed. Monuments, museum figures, statues, etc. And they're also taking into advisement the possibility of dismantling the Washington Monument. In Chicago, the FBI uncovered a little plot out of the countless criminal thug gangs they have. Three dozen of them got together and agreed that they're going to shoot any cops on sight they see if they have their gun out. I marvel that you can find one person willing to be a police officer in that city, or pretty much any city. Again, if any of these things are striking a chord, call us. We want to hear your thoughts on this. 775-884-9910. Also in Kenosha, right after the rioting and the main looting and burning stopped, a group called Black Voices for Trump, an out-of-town group of black adults, went to Kenosha to help clean up from the riots. Did you happen to see that story in the media? In Baltimore, it was on Twitter. It's about the most gruesome 20-second video you're going to see. You'll see a white man walking away in the middle of the day on a sidewalk. You see a young black man running up slow and silent behind him and just taking a full swing and crushing his head with a brick. And the white man just passes out and hits the ground like he'd been shot. It just looked like watching an execution. What did the assailant and his supporters who were laughing during this, what did they post on Twitter? White lives do not matter. And laughing it and saying, oh, this was just a great thing to watch. But the best summary we had of the week on this comes from a state Democratic representative from Memphis named John DeBerry. And he spoke out courageously against Black Lives Matter. He said, I marched with my dad for civil rights. Black Lives Matter is absolutely no comparison. In civil rights, blacks loved America and wanted to be full members of it. These BLM punks are getting emboldened because we the people won't stand up and protect our stuff. What kind of people have we become? This is him still talking. I don't want to see the country we're going to have, brothers, if we don't stand up and say, Black Lives Matter has no right to tear down and destroy things paid for by taxpayers. Let's see. We've got an award here for the most racist, full of herself quote of the week. The award goes to Oprah Winfrey. On her show, she said this week, you know, the U.S. is plagued with white supremacy. White people need to ask themselves, what can I do to change myself? Fortunately, Oprah is offering to serve as a guide for whites to confront their unconscious bias. I don't know about you. I'd prefer that she teach a class in how to earn the $2 billion plus that she made over an unheard of 25-year run on television in this terribly oppressive white supremacist society. And finally, the racist quote of the week goes to Doc Rivers, the NBA coach with the Clippers. He's here, he has a quote, all you hear, Doc says, is Donald Trump and all of those whites talking about fear. We black people are the ones getting killed, shot, we were hung. Yeah, shot mostly by other blacks lately, Doc. And he says, all you do is keep hearing about fear. He says, it's amazing why we black people keep loving this country and this country doesn't love us back. Doc, you got to start a pity club with Michelle Obama. This racial injustice in America, Doc, has given you 37 years in probably one of the most elite jobs there is, working in the NBA as a coach and player. Your current salary is $7 million. Your net worth is $50 million. Doc says, it's so sad I'm so often reminded of my color. Well, only because you, Doc, keep making a big deal out of it. But here's the hypocrisy. Doc's player, Montrezl Harrell, called Dallas player Luka Doncic, a white guy, a string of expletives ending with white boy on national TV. It would have been the equivalent of Doncic calling Harrell his least favorite black slur. Well, what happened? If Doncic had called Latrell that, if the white guy had called the black guy this, he would have been fined, probably kicked off the team, possibly kicked out of the league, and every black player in the universe would have refused to play with him. Well, what happened when it was a black player, Harrell, doing this to Doncic? No fine, no game missed, not a word by Doc Rivers, oddly enough. Reversism, racism works, I guess, Doc. Other than Harrell just kind of patted him on the shoulder. It says he had to be coerced to go do it. And he said, well, you know, sorry, man. When what had happened, just a few weeks prior, a white announcer for the Sacramento Kings had been asked by a player on air, what do you think of Black Lives Matter? The announcer, a white guy, says, I think all lives matter, every one of them. Boom. Job disappeared, forced to resign after 30 years, condemned by one black player after another. Again, you got to wonder, why a viewership on NBA games disappearing? There's a good reason. Stay with us, please. Call in 884-775-884-9910. Coming up right after the break, our interview with Thomas Abbott, the Tri-Racial Marketing and Advertising Director, UCLA grad, young man, excellent guy. We're going to hear a lot. He's half white, quarter Asian, quarter black. We're going to hear what Thomas's experience has been. Stay with us. We're glad you're here, and we'll see you after break.
It's Race Across America, 99.1 FM Talk, KKFT.
And I'm Paul White. This is Race Across America, and welcome back to the second half. You're in for a real treat. We've got a great interview with a guest all the way from Texas. We've got Thomas Abbott on the line. Thomas, how are you?
Hey, Paul. Doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Thomas is a marketing and advertising director for a national company, which wouldn't be so unusual other than the fact that he barely looks like he's old enough to vote, and he's got this incredible position. He's a UCLA grad and pre-med. He's got an interesting background. He's what we'd call tri-racial, half white, quarter Asian, quarter black, I was raised by a black mom. Thomas, why don't you start wherever you want? What was your experience growing up? The argument today is it's systemically racist. It's the deck is stacked against black people. Nobody can quite specify what this is. You and your unique background, how was your growing up period? What did you experience?
Yeah, that's a great question and something that I've been thinking about more lately in my life that I can more reflect on it with a more clear conscious and rationality. But, you know, growing up triracial, it was not as, I think, unique as people kind of told me it was, you know, at the same time that you know, I was going through all the, you know, going through the ropes of grade school, middle school, high school.
Mm-hmm.
I think race mattered to a lot more people than it did to me.
Nice.
And I think when it kind of especially mattered, I think even getting into high school, I think the identity kind of culture of the United States really kind of came to fruition, especially for young people. So it was questions like what identify as, especially going to college. You know, that was like kind of the first question you even get when you get to college is, you know, how do you identify?
Yeah,
you know,
what, how would you answer that, Thomas?
You are. Yeah, so I'd sum it plainly, just how I've always said it, you know, half white, quarter black, quarter Vietnamese. You'd get looks. It would, you know, kind of like weird looks or disbelief. Almost like I have to kind of prove it in some way. That's always the case, but it's typically when, you know, I say it, and especially in the college sphere, I think it was more I needed proof more so then than I ever did in my life growing up in San Diego.
Did all three groups pretty much welcome you, or how was it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the answer would be no. You know, I've always kind of felt growing up, I would have probably said culturally very American and Asian. But, you know, in general, I felt like I wanted to kind of be you know, with groups. I wanted to hang out with people, and I kind of felt like that was almost a handicap, was that it was kind of holding me back, kind of telling people what I was. So I don't think I was welcomed, you know, much by my black friends as much as I thought I was going to be. Because I was kind of, they made me feel like it was that important, but, you know, it kind of wasn't. And same for, you know, a lot of the Asian friends that I had as well growing up, especially going to college, when I really wanted to join the a Christian Asian group. And I didn't really feel as welcomed as I thought I was going to be, you know, even though I kind of shared some of the culture that, you know, that they likely all shared in that group together, which is probably why they had that group, you know? So, you know, I definitely tried to drink that Kool-Aid. I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to feel part of it, right? A part of something. And especially in college when, you know, especially today, I think in today's world, you know, you really want to find that group. And today that group is an identity more so than ever before. It's a group of identity.
Oh yeah. The disturbing thing to me,
really able to fit into.
Disturbing thing to me, Thomas, is when you hear that more and more at campuses, you've got the different racial groups clicking off. They're asking, especially with the blacks, asking, well, they want black dorms, even some want a black workout hangout area, black dining halls, a black graduation. I mean, what did your mom and dad tell you? What advice did they give you about how to, who did you want to be?
Yeah, great question. So both my parents didn't really go to a traditional four-year college like I did. So, yeah, even growing up for me, I didn't really have any expectations of what college was going to be. I didn't really have many older friends either. I was the oldest child as well. So I didn't really have that kind of guidance of, like, knowing or, like, you know, the advice of, like, what to do when I got there. So I kind of just – I was winging it. And, you know, I guess at the time I thought I failed at winging it. But looking back, I think I was successful at not falling into the traps.
Well, with what you see going on right now in society, I mean, like, you know, when Black Lives Matter's got, oh, the polls say 60%+ of the country supporting them, hard as that is to believe, when you've got all the arguments about law enforcement, what's your own take on the Black Lives Matter movement? I mean, we're not talking the generic statement, of course. Every life matters, but the organization itself, what's your take on them? How are you?
Yeah. So that's something I've been doing a lot more research into lately. And, you know, I've kind of noticed that I think support has been waning a bit. I've seen the polls, too, that support of the movement has gone down. And I think it's no surprise as more information has come out about the leaders and their manifesto, and I don't use that word lightly. Lightly, right. They have a manifesto, and it's you know very Marxist.
They're Marxist, like right down the line.
They're not scared of saying it, and shockingly, you know, in 2020, it's you know, 50 years ago. Oh my gosh, this would be that's horrible. But now it's like, okay, all these businesses need to support them. All these announcers, as you mentioned earlier, need to support them. Sports announcers, sportscasters, right?
Oh, yeah.
Out of everyone, they need to be political, right, and assert their and kind of fall into that as well. So, you know, I think the organization itself is, you know, I think it's worse for the actual why people support them. I don't know why they do at this point, just because I think it's caused a lot more harm than good. You know, and I think that's been clear across the nation, pretty much everywhere that they've set their feet.
Right.
Dip their toes. I mean, they're not even planted their feet. So they dip their toes, it's just caused chaos.
Right. Let me ask you something, Thomas. I assume you're a child of the 90s, pretty much. Is that accurate?
Yep.
Okay. So say from the 90s up to now, so, you know, within a three-decade span. In your experience, could you share one or more of what, you know, when we hear so much about, like you say, you hear so much about systemic racism, everything's stacked against you. You're hearing more voices, including ours, saying, give me one example of it. And no one answers that question. In your 30, that span that you've been around, what's the worst examples of the most blatant, horrible, racist treatment that you've experienced in your life, where you were discriminated against because of your race?
Yeah, and honestly, in no way at all. And that's why when I hear systemic racism and that, you know, I'm on social media and I see the posts all the time from friends from high school, you know, just everywhere. I'm always, like, kind of shocked to read the kind of their justification of using systemic racism as something that exists today.
Right.
And trying to, you know, bring up anecdotes and things like that. But, you know, really the facts kind of go against that. And of course, in my case and my family, very, very diverse family, my stepdad's from Guatemala. My mom is an immigrant from Vietnam who's half black, half Vietnamese.
Wow.
You know, obviously grandmother immigrant from Vietnam. And even for them, you know, I guess you'd think that the odds were against them to make something of themselves, and yet they did. And they don't have any complaints about it either. You know, so yeah, I think what's amazing about this country is that we all do have equal opportunity. And I think that systemic racism is almost a cop out, you know, blaming that as a cop out to taking responsibility for, you know, like one's own actions and one's own maybe, you know, degree choices in college. You know, I don't want to knock anyone's degree, but sure. So when you kind of use systemic racism to say, like,
yeah,
I can't get a job. It could be maybe the degree you chose wasn't a very marketable degree for yourself.
Let's just say if you hold a pre-med degree in one hand and a cultural studies or a communications degree in the other, they don't exactly carry equal weight in employment and compensation.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think millennials get a bad rap, and I think that it's well-deserved. I think my generation does a lot of complaining and doesn't take personal responsibility very well at all. But, you know, I think using systemic racism to just to say that it still exists, it's harming so many people. Yeah, I kind of think back to Colin Kaepernick's situation. You know, he was,
right.
You know, he was adopted by a white family, you know, and I think it's just the irony of, like, oh, white privilege, you know, it's like, well, you know, Colin Kaepernick had the odds against him, but I guess a white family adopted him.
Quite an affluent one,
and
yeah.
He's able to make, affluent one. He was able to make a great career for himself, and he was kind of like the first proponent of, you know, protesting in sports and boycotts and things like that. So, you know, I when I hear systemic racism, I really kind of look at it as a cop out for personal responsibility.
Colin Kaepernick's also interesting. When he was starting for the 49ers, playing in a Super Bowl, he was speaking proudly on a 4th of July of America. 2 years later, he was riding the bench, was probably going to get dropped by the team. And, you know, that's when kind of the little bit more discontent came up. Maybe there's a connection, maybe not. Thomas, last question I got for you. When we've talked before, you said you might have political aspirations in the future, and Boy, I sure hope you follow through on them. You'd have my vote. but unlike what President Trump said, I won't vote as many times as I can. I'll just vote once for you. My question is, if you were speaking to America and they were going to listen and they were as far as what can we do when we've got with resources and opportunity and freedom to absolute, unlike the world has ever seen, more people have bettered their lives in the United States of America than anywhere in history. And we seem to be just running downhill to try to throw this away. What would you have to say to the country in terms of how to both reasonably deal with reasonable complaints, but yet get on with our lives and personal accountability? I mean, what would you say? What's the solution to this that we're so tired of reading about?
Yeah, yeah. And there are so many things that I could say, but I think what's different today than it was before many generations ago is I think society is very lacking today. I think we're kind of living in a godless society.
You and me.
And I think that, it's showing. And I think it's showing, so much more this year than ever. Obviously, this year is like no other. We have a pandemic going on, and, still it's people are out protesting and ignoring the, distancing orders. But in any case, I think without God in society, I think this trend will continue. I think humanity is not uniting us, essentially, right? BLM does not care about humanity, right? They're proving it. Shouting down people. I've seen videos of people being shouted down, at restaurants in Rochester, outside of a coffee shop.
Right.
Kind of forcing people to agree with them. The anti-fascists are being fascists yelling at people, forcing them to agree with them. So I guess humanity is not something that they are using as something to bond us together. So I think ultimately, at the end of the day, it's God. And I think, as a Catholic, as a Christian in America, it's something to where you definitely take a notice to it, that it's been going down and down. And you kind of see these movements going up and up. And I think the correlation is there. And I think it shouldn't be ignored. So, I definitely kind of focus on, if I was running, I think that the Democratic Party kind of removing under God from the Pledge of Allegiance or from their party platform is something that is, I think, hurting, America as a whole and kind of dividing us. Our humanity is already divided. I think let's unite under God. I think from there we find humanity with each other. Versus them kind of going after humanity, going after God. This godless society is showing itself, and it really should be addressed. And I really hope that, elected leaders, Trump right now, to someone to come out and just kind of say it, for what it is, that right. This is affecting us in so many ways that, no one could ever thought in the past.
Well, Thomas, I hope when you start running for office, you don't back off that religious component one iota. I mean, Alex de Tocqueville in the late 18th century, when he came over to America, early 19th, and he looked around and he was impressed. He said, America is great because she is good, and when she ceases to be good, she'll cease to be great. And, of course, any definition of good would typically start with what's been always considered the traditional Judeo-Christian values. I mean, where else do we get forgiveness and selflessness and love and kindness, etc., and one Father of all? So I couldn't agree with you more, and I also couldn't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today. We'll look forward to having you back again. So just thank you so much for being on here, and we got a lot out of what you had to say. Thank you.
Yeah, it was an honor, Paul. Thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
Okay. All right. Again, if you've got any comments about what Thomas had to say, a lot of good stuff there. We want to hear from you, 775-884-9910. What we're going to start with here, just these last few minutes to the top of the hour, is what we'll pick up with next week. And I tell you, you need to tighten your belt. There's a line in the Bible, someone said, these words are hard to bear. And one of the things that's missing from being able to heal this race situation is just the facts about what's really behind it. The question is, what's at the heart of the race argument and the fighting? Isn't everyone totally sick of it? And it's really not a all races argument. We hear this, all people of color, etc. It's not all races. If we're honest, we look at the statistics, it's a decades-long and unsolved argument of blacks and white liberals complaining about unfair treatment of blacks by whites. The complaints do not typically come from the average employed black family who's raising good kids, contributing to their communities, building and living the American dream. These complaints come almost exclusively from three groups. And those three groups should be paid no attention: celebrities, professional athletes, and politicians. Their following is primarily people less educated of any race who have not taken advantage of the countless opportunities to improve their lives that have been available to them for decades. We'll pick up with this in just a second. We've got a call, I believe. Who we got on there? We got Bruce. Hello, Bruce. What do you think about the show? What do you got to say?
Well, it's absolutely wonderful. I just wanted to call and caution you that there's a possibility you might alienate a whole lot of people when you come out there with facts that are verifiable, statistics that are easy to look up. And you're making it real hard for people to play the victim, Paul. Just wanted to caution you.
Thanks, Bruce. Well, the risk is well worth taking. We appreciate you calling. So, we know that it's not like white people don't have a significant share of that race clogging the wheels of America's progress and contributing nothing. We got plenty. People know to get statistics right, the highest percentage of people on welfare are blacks, but the numerically largest number on welfare are white. But never since the Civil Rights Act passed have we seemed to be able to collectively catch up blacks to help them catch up with every other race in every possible statistical category. You hear this argument of gaps between those who have and those who have not. And it's often said again, oh, this is all people of color. That's an excuse. And it's used by black opportunists like an Al Sharpton. And it's not true. I can't recall in my life hearing one Asian voice complaining about systemic racism. Well, with the possibility of Yale University recently, where Asians are being denied admission there at 10 times the rate of blacks because they're saying they've got too many Asians. And their kids are doing, and Asians and their children are doing better than any racial group in America, including whites. You almost never hear from Latinos a claim of systemic racism. I can't ever remember hearing one. They're too busy working, raising their kids, making progress in all sociological areas ahead of blacks. And you don't hear it from the blacks that we hear about that are doing such great things. Most of the names you don't hear about. I've worked public schools my whole life and met tons of black families and black kids who are taking care of business. And when you listen on the radio, a Larry Elder, Candace Owens, Harris twins, Thomas Sowell, on and on. These people, it's not about race. It's not about race at all. It's about what you do. Now, if we want to solve the race problem, we've got to call it what it is. And what it is simply a too long unsolved problem between blacks and whites. Well, this show's dedicated to healing solutions, so we're going to get started. We just got a few little minutes. I'm sorry, that was the Hodge twins. I enjoy your show, guys. So if we're dedicated to healing. We're going to do this in three parts. We'll never get through it today, but we'll pick right up first thing next week. First question we'll answer is, how bad is the gap between how blacks are doing versus the rest of America. And the gap, what we're going to look at is the issues in birth rates, out-of-wedlock rate, employment, school performance, net worth, incarceration rate, STDs rate, life expectancy. We're going to go right down the list and take a look. So we're going to look at, first of all, how bad is the gap? Let's just look at the statistics. And most of them come from the Center for Disease Control, the Department of Justice, the Department of Ed Statistics, Department of Labor. So these aren't just numbers we're pulling out of a hat. Second thing we're going to look at is what's causing this persistent gap. We'll look at what the gap is and then what's causing it. And then the final thing we'll look at is, well, what can be done right now to solve it? So the overview is, in virtually every sociological category, all those areas I mentioned, parenting, out of wedlock, education, employment, net worth, incarceration rate, school performance, etc. With the four races, if you look at Asian, Black, Asian, White, Latino, Black, in that order, virtually every category not only comes in that order, but comes in with the same proportion of differences on each category. So, for example, Asians are, if we look at, say, out-of-wedlock rate, for example, Asians have the lowest, Whites have the next, Latinos have the next, Blacks have the highest. So how bad is the gap for the race? It's pretty much from cradle to grave. And as we start to look at this, there's two possible causes. It's either a systematic plan by evil forces lurking in the dark, like it said in Thriller, or it's something to do with choice and culture and values, and that can be changed. And next week, we're going to pick up absolutely knowing what that is. We're going to finish today one of my favorite quotes. It's an excerpt from a talk given by Frederick Douglass, freed slave. He said, "When we find a man who's ascended heights beyond ourselves, who has a broader range of vision than we in a sky with more stars in it than we have in ours, we may know that he's worked harder, better, more wisely than we have. He was awake while we slept. He was busy while we were idle. He was wisely improving his time and talents while we were wasting ours." Next week, we're going to look at how bad is it with this gap between Black and White achievement and having and have-notting in America as a whole. We're going to look at what's causing it and how to fix it, and we want you to join us. This is Paul White with Race for America. We appreciate you joining us. See you next week.